You're listening to System Kids on CKUW 95.9 FM, bringing the issues of youth in and from care, from their lives to your minds.
Hey fam, thanks for tuning in to System Kids today. My name is Marie. I'm the director at Voices, Manitoba's Youth and Care Network. And today I am coming to you live from Montreal. Well, not actually. I'm currently in Calgary, probably going to be on a plane by the time this episode is airing. But we wanted to make sure that we continued on with the theme of youth voice. And we really wanted to emphasize how important it is that young people be involved in every aspect of their lives, especially when you're in care. As you know, System Kids, this is our hour of power where young people in and from care get to share their lived experiences with you so that you can know what it's really like to be a part of the child welfare system. And hopefully you will stand with us as an ally to make a better system of care in Manitoba. So, today we are not following our usual format. Instead, today I'm going to share with you two interviews that really highlight the importance of youth voice. The first one is going to be by Michael Braithwaite, who has a podcast called On the Way Home. Michael is part of Blue Door, which is an organization in Ontario that deals with homelessness. And he is interviewing Dr. Melanie Doucette, one of our favorite people here in the world of youth and care networking. She's an alumni of CARE who is doing really powerful things, bringing together the voices of young people across Canada, but also across generations by gathering recommendations that have been put in place by young people and other academics and researchers about the need for more equitable transitions from care. And she, you know, was very, very intentional on making sure that the voices of young people, the voices of lived experts, drove this project. So that's our first interview. And for the second interview, we are going to listen to that interview we started off the month with Faye, who is the executive director of the Queer Momentum Project, out of Ontario. We got to hear the first part of that interview, but we didn't get to hear the second part where Faye talks about sharing your story. How do you share your story safely and for effect, you know, in order to effect change in our communities? So that is what we're doing today. We really hope you join us next week again when we're live and in the studio. But for this week, please listen to these really generous and gifted folks who are sharing their perspective, young people, to hopefully inspire you to use your voice, whether it's for provincial or systemic change, or whether it's just to advocate for yourself. Yeah, it's okay to speak up for yourself. Your voice matters, though. You matter. Your story matters. And if you need help making your voice heard at whatever level you need to make it heard, remember, this is your network. So call Voices anytime, 204-982-4956. Toll free across Manitoba, 1-866-982-4956. You can find us online, www.voices.mb.ca, or on Facebook, Twitter, X, and Instagram, all kind of a variation of Voices MB or Voices MYICN. You'll find us online. And we want to hear from you. This is your network, and we want to hear from you in all your glory. So thanks for tuning in today, and I'll check in with you again at the end of the show. Enjoy the interviews.
Welcome, Housers, to another episode of On the Way Home. I am your host, Michael Braithwaite from Blue Door. I'm very excited for our guest today. We have Dr. Doucette with us, Dr. Melanie Doucette. Melanie, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.
What does home mean to you?
Home for me, it's more community and support network, family, chosen family, people in your life than a roof over your head. I think that stems from displacement in my childhood, where I moved around a lot. I was a foster kid all throughout my teenage years. I moved around, I think, 6 times in 4 years while I was in care. And that kind of followed me in my early adulthood years. It was a while before, like, I was able to achieve housing stability. And it was really the people in my life at the time, and some of these people are still in my life today, that kept me stable emotionally and mentally and kept me off the streets, to be quite honest with you. I always had a warm, you know, place to crash, a couch to crash on. Some of my friends would take me home with them for the holidays because I couldn't, you know, I'd go home and celebrate the holidays with my family. So I had really good people in my life that deeply cared about me and believed in me, and that makes a hell of a difference. And so I would say that's how I felt at home, and I continue to feel at home.
I love it. It's about the people. And you touched on this, but you're both an expert in your field. Mm-hmm. The PhD and what we call a lived expert, because this lived experience, not like, I think this is what should happen. It's, I went through this. Can you, as much as you're comfortable, can you tell us a little bit about your journey into the work you're doing now?
Yeah, I mean, my experience is dated in a way, because I exited care well over 20 years ago, a little bit more. And so some of the things that I went through have changed, but some things haven't. Some things have not changed in 20 years. And that is really what drives the work that I do, is to really be pushing for that change to happen quickly, because youth in care can't afford to wait. I would say my lived experience definitely is the core of my passion for this work. I didn't come into contact with another person like me from care until my late 20s, I would say, when the New Brunswick Youth and Care Network got established. That was like 2010. And that was my first time experiencing a context where I could tell my story and make a difference, and not really be a victim forever, and really take back the power that was taken away from me when I was a kid. So getting involved with the network and getting to do advocacy with my story and my lived experiences in front of politicians, in front of ministers, in front of the child and youth advocate, it really, really sparked something in me. We had in 2012 the very first New Brunswick Youth in Care hearings, which were modeled after the Ontario Youth in Care hearings. We had a full day at the New Brunswick legislature where 6 of us from the network presented our stories to the premier and the minister. There was other ministers there, the child and youth advocate. And then at the end of the day, we provided concrete recommendations for change. And that day was so emotional in a good way, where we saw, you know, the light in the politicians' eyes, where they started to realize that we're human, and that we could have been their children. You know, like, it just made us more human in their eyes. And I think telling stories is so powerful in that sense, where we're not just statistics, we're not just case numbers, we're people, and people with dreams and hopes and fears and needs. And so that really propelled me to want to do more of that. And so I think that was kind of the beginning of me wanting to pursue a PhD, where I was like, how can I do that as a career, where I'm providing a platform for people like me, people who've lived through the system, are younger than me, and give them that platform to be able to turn their lives and their stories into something really powerful for change. So that's really what sparked my desire to pursue a PhD, which I moved to Montreal to do my PhD at the McGill School of Social Work in 2013. And I did, for my doctoral project, I did a community-based photo voice project. So using photography as a research tool. And I did it with 8 youth in the greater Vancouver area who had exited care in recent years. And we looked at the relationships that matter to young people from care and how they can be supported in establishing those and sustaining them in a healthy way over the course of their lives. And then we did, at the end of a 12-week project, we did a photo exhibit in a community gallery, and we invited the media, politicians, child and youth advocate. There was over 100 people that showed up. It was really powerful. And yeah, I just love doing that kind of work. It just excites me.
I think it gives so many people so much hope, right? I mean, you did not take a traditional path of having, for many people who have this, you know, support of family through education to client. And can you listen, listeners know, and many that we've had on the show, to get a PhD, it is a long journey. It is hard work. You did that without a lot of the traditional support. How important is it when we're creating policy to have voices like yours, or the voices of lived experts and those with lived experience at the table?
It's vital. In my opinion, a policy shouldn't be implemented without it, like, because then you're missing a whole like part of the picture. And the people who the policy impacts should be involved in the creation of the policy. To me, that just is like complete common sense. But it's not traditionally part of the process. So I think that needs to change. I do think people who have lived through the systems know best in terms of what needs change in the system. So I'm trying to bring that to the table more often, especially with governments and policy decision makers. And I think people are starting to realize that this is the way to go, because in the past, it hasn't been done and things haven't worked. So it's like, how could we, you know, do things that we know will actually impact and work and are based from a lived expert lens?
I love it. And well said. Now, you're working on a project right now. What can you tell me about the Equitable Transitions to Adulthood and a Just Pandemic Recovery for Youth in Care project? How did it come about? What is its goal?
Yeah, so this was pretty much almost immediately after I finished my PhD. I was hired by the Child Welfare League of Canada to do a systematic review of all the gray literature, is what we call it. So reports and papers that weren't published in academic journals that came out in Canada since the late 80s about aging out of care issues. And so I did a compilation, and there was over 75 reports at the time. There's probably a lot more now. This was released in 2021, this review, and with over 475 recommendations related to aging out of care were made throughout these reports. And then I highlighted the most recurring ones. So we picked the top 5 recurring ones. And one of the recurring ones was a lack of national standards on exits from care supports. So this is something that we decided we wanted to focus on. So there's a group of us that convened, thanks to the Child Welfare League of Canada, and also Away Home Canada was pivotal in making this happen. So people like myself, academics with lived experience, advocates with lived experience, as well as directors and coordinators of youth and care networks from across the country, we convened together to start discussing, you know, the concerns that we have related to youth aging out of care, but also the pandemic, which was unprecedented. We were really concerned that youth were having to age out as usual in a very unusual and dangerous time. And governments were making all these, you know, public health announcements and having people isolate, and, you know, CERB was being announced and all these things. And youth in care were still expected to age out as usual. We were like, this makes absolutely no sense. Where are they going to go? A lot of them end up on the street, and that puts them even more at risk. We didn't have a vaccine at that time, and so we were really concerned. And so we mobilized as a council, as a national council, to advocate for moratoriums on aging out of care during the pandemic. And this was very beginning of the pandemic, March 2020, that we decided to mobilize to do that. And we were successful in getting quite a few provinces and territories to issue moratoriums or emergency measures. So once we were successful in that, we were like, okay, what happens when those expire? What happens when the pandemic ends? We didn't know when it was gonna end at the time. But we were like, what happens then? Because emergency measures and moratoriums are temporary. And do we return back to the way things were before the pandemic? Because we know that's not working. And the systematic review that I was doing was showcasing that, you know, there had been multiple reports, many, many recommendations, but nothing concrete had really happened. And so we wanted to focus on longer term solutions, so that we could have meaningful systemic change happen for transitions to adulthood. And so that's really where that all started. And we decided to focus on national standards because that was one of the recurring recommendations that was coming out of all these reports. And so I looked at the literature as an academic who just finished her PhD on aging out of care issues. I wrote a gigantic literature review chapter and my thesis on it. So we looked at the literature and we came up with the 8 transition to adulthood pillars that you see outlined in the Equitable Standards Report. And from there, we held validation sessions across the country through our national council members with youth who were either still in care at the time or had recently exited care. And they added to the framework. So they added all the key supports under the pillars that they felt that they needed to thrive. So not just, you know, barely surviving, really it's about creating conditions where young people from care are able to experience similar outcomes to their peers who aren't in care. So that's really about, you know, elevating the bar much, much higher. Actually, there is no bar. So it's setting a bar and then over time, you know, elevating it to a point where we are providing equitable supports to young people from care, where, you know, every young person that exits care gets to obtain a high school diploma equivalent. That's currently not the case. It's like less than 50% that actually graduate high school compared to over 90% of their peers in the general population. So we need to really elevate young people from care to that same status. And in order to do that, we have to provide much more supports and continuous care beyond the age of majority, and that's what we're advocating for.
When you walk through storm, hold your head up high. It's a golden ray and the sweet silver song of a love. Walk on through the storm. Walk on
way through this, were there any surprises as you did the research? Anything that jumped out that you thought, oh, I didn't think it would?
Well, I just think it was surprising to me that, you know, there'd been so many reports coming out since the late 80s, but nothing really concrete coming to fruition. It's like all these reports just kind of collecting dust somewhere. And to me, that I felt that was very frustrating. It's like people have been, you know, saying the same thing over and over again for, you know, well over two decades. How do we make it so that it's undeniable and also actionable? So let's present solutions. Let's not suggest anymore. You know, let's present solutions and concrete actions in a step-by-step manner that can be taken by any key stakeholder who works with young people in and from care, whether it's a government or a community organization or a university, a college, that really brings people to the table and gets them to self-assess and self-reflect from a lived experience lens. And so that's really what the Equitable Standards is all about. It's about presenting solutions and a roadmap to significant and meaningful systemic change from a lived experience-centered lens. So really about meeting young people where they're at instead of young people meeting systems where they're at, which is tends to be the case right now.
Beautiful. So what are next steps? We got this here. I couldn't agree more in the sense that we do so many reports and we pull this out, we put people through the trauma of getting their information, whatever, and then we put it on the shelf and then we do it again another couple of years later, right? Like, and not to, it's not the same, but we had in York Region, we had one big research thing that showed that 2S LGBTQ plus youth did not feel safe in the emergency housing that we had, right? You know, so that went perfect, good to know. And then Dr. Alex Abramovich came and did another research piece and it told us more and more in depth. And I thought, what is the purpose? So Blue Door, we just said enough, we'll figure it out, set up the housing, right? Like how many reports do we need before it's actionable to your words? So what are next steps to make this actual? What are you hoping for? What's going to happen?
Yeah. So we're currently piloting the Equitable Standards Evaluation Model. So that was released in the fall of 2022. And it's basically a Likert scale fidelity assessment to the Equitable Standards and really entails a baseline assessment from any organization or ministry that works with young people in and from care to assess where they're currently at in their supports and policies and programs and meeting the Equitable Standards and where do they need to go in order to get there. So we're currently piloting this evaluation model over 2023, 2024. We have 13 pilot partners from across the country who are committed to doing this. We have three government ministries included in that. We have the Department of Social Development in New Brunswick, the Department of Social Development and Seniors and PEI, and the Ministry of Family and Child Services in the Northwest Territories. So we have three government ministries who are doing it, and then 10 community-based organizations from BC, Manitoba, Ontario, New Brunswick, Newfoundland, and Northwest Territories. So what we're doing throughout the course of this year is meeting with our pilot partners, making sure that they're doing the process as intended and providing support to them and also gathering their feedback on how we can improve the evaluation model, make it accessible, easy to complete. And our goal for next year and 2025 until I think about 2027, we're going to submit a proposal for funding to digitize the evaluation model once it's been finalized and have it on an online platform and then do a call to action, a national call to action to get more key stakeholders on board and more ministries on board across the country.
A lot of work ahead, important work moving forward. If people want to get involved, if they want to find out more, if they want to support, or they're just interested, or they want to see the research, where can they go?
We're on the Child Welfare League of Canada's website right now. I will provide a link tree that we have that has all the links to all the resources for this project. We have a really cool 16-minute video that we prepared that really provides a good overview of who we are as the National Council, what the Equitable Standards is, going through each pillar, what the purpose of the evaluation model is. So that will also be in the link tree, as well as the reports and the evaluation model, our webpage, all of that.
Incredible, Melanie. Dr. Doucette, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing. You're really living the motto of nothing for us without us, that inclusive, you bring a different lens to this research, to this work. It's so appreciated. It's so needed. I've spent a lot of time over the years in the area of youth experiencing homelessness and you know, all the time we saw what played into it, youth exiting care. I forget what the percentages were, but it was so high. And so I saw the direct need for this and the fact that you're setting the bar and setting that bar high and holding people accountable is incredible, and it's going to be impactful. So thank you so much for the work you do.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me.
Great. I really appreciate what Melanie had to share about the process of coming up with the equitable standards and the importance of ensuring that lived experts are informing policy, because we know what we've experienced and we know what would have worked better for us. It might not work better for everyone, but let me tell you, if you at least ask a group of people who've gone through anything, you'll find some common themes. And that's a great place to start when wanting to provide better services and supports for any demographic. But, you know, our bias is especially young people in and from care. That was terrific. Okay, so on to our second interview of the hour with Faye Johnson from Queer Momentum in Ontario. And I'll check in with you after this interview is done. You're listening to System Kids on CKUW 95.9 FM.
My voice, your voice, no blind eyes, this is our choice. Can't ignore the lies, cause the struggle is real. No shoes, no roof, no meat.
See, some just grow old while others die in the cold. Future's always uncertain with stories often untold. When society's allowed you to slip between the cracks, and all you asked for was some change but had no means to pay it back. In a world of health, the scalp bounce from shelter to shelter. Play the cards, life dealt you when it seemed no one would help you. Cause poverty can be at home and all around the air. It lingers everywhere with an attitude that spells I don't care. It became my choice as someone who makes noise to no longer sit back but act and be their voice. You thought it was just third world, but it became much more. Poverty still sits in Canada and is knocking at your door. That person may seem strange when they're asking for your change, but before you're quick to blame, hear their story as their name. The streets can be relentless and wash away the tears, so please don't let these voices go fall upon deaf ears.
My voice, your voice, no blind eyes, this is our choice. Can't ignore the lies, cause the struggle is real. No shoes, no roof, no meaning. My voice, your voice, no blind eyes, this is our choice. Can't ignore the lies, cause the struggle is real. No shoes, no roof, no meaning.
Poverty, it sees no age, gender, color, or creed. Sometimes a little help is all you need to get on your feet. It's time for the restructure, social programs and a game plan. Put ourselves out in the rain, man. It ain't too late to save them. Some can only try, and it's a struggle to get by. Such a sad sight on a cold night, it's a fight just to survive. The underlying issues tend to never be addressed, like the addictions, mental illness, past abuse, even stress. Determine cause and the effect, turn neglect into respect. Yes, we all bleed the same color red, last time I checked. Show compassion in these days, stand united in our ways. Equality and being true to every single word and phrase. It could be me, it could be you, but the bottom line is us, and it's a must. We put the trust within ourselves with any luck. Now we're here to sing these words, and in the midst the voice is heard. Let us demonstrate it, hopes it resonates throughout the world. The world.
My voice, your voice, no blind eyes, this is our choice. Can't ignore the lies, cause the struggle is real. Shoes, no roots, no meaning. My voice, your voice, no blind eyes, this is our choice.
Listening to System Kids on CKUW 95.9 FM. And today we are so glad to have a special guest with us to talk about the power of using your voice. Today I am with Faye Johnston, and we're going to learn more about how they use their voice to create a better, just a better world, a better system of care, a better environment for everyone to feel included and welcome and empowered. So, hi, Faye.
Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Just to start, would you mind telling our listeners who you are? Who are you?
I love and hate that question, as I think everyone does. So hello, everybody. My name is Faye Johnstone. I use she and they pronouns, and I live on unceded, unsurrendered Algonquin, Anishinaabe territory, colonially known as Ottawa. And I wear a bunch of hats in my work, but most particularly, I am the executive director of Wisdom to Action, a small consulting firm that largely works with nonprofits, health and social services, and governments on, as I like to say, all things gay, all things gender, and all things helping our organizations function more effectively. And then I also wear a hat as an advocate for queer and trans rights, the executive director of a nonprofit called the Society of Queer Momentum that helps mobilize communities to advance a more free and equal future for queer folks, and for everybody else too.
Wow. Okay. How did you get involved in this work?
So I actually got involved because of my own personal experiences. I came out as a queer person in my mid-teens and then came out as trans in my early 20s. And my experiences, coming out at school, coming out in society, so to say, there were some positive pieces, but there was a lot of harm and hurt too. Mm-hmm. And those experiences of discrimination, of bullying, and of seeing how I wasn't as safe and wasn't as free as others might be, have really motivated me to do the work that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I've been privileged to have folks supporting me to help lift up my voice, learn how to do this kind of stuff, and organize for that better future all of our kids, all of our families deserve.
Right. Yeah. So you said some of the experiences you had during your period of self-identity exploration, some were positive and some were negative. Can you share with us some of the positive ones?
Absolutely. The positive one is I think something so many young folks can relate to today. It is the moment where you're walking as your true self, where you're not pretending to be anybody other than who you are. And that was like a breath of fresh air. I felt when I first came out as queer and then as trans, I felt like a shadow was lifting, like the clouds were parting, like I could show the world who I really was. Mm-hmm. And that had an incredible impact on my mental health, but also on who I was as a person. I'm more confident now. I'm more proud to be who I am. And I walk with my shoulders high, my head up, in a world that often teaches us not to do either of those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you remember a specific time that happened for you? Was it in school or at a picnic?
I think my funniest story might actually be when I came out in high school initially. Mm-hmm. So for context, like if you've ever met me today, I am an extrovert through and through. I am loud. I love people. I love socializing. But before, I wasn't like this. I was the quiet, shy, anxious kid who was scared, who was almost like, you know, living my life by a script that wasn't written by me. And I felt very much like I was hiding myself.
Right.
And then I remember when I came out, and I actually did the most awkward thing. I do not recommend this. I posted a poem on Facebook right before the school December holiday break. And it was a poem about a swing that swung both ways. And it was my indelicate way of coming out as bisexual.
Mm-hmm.
I have deleted that Facebook memory. I love to tell the story. No one's allowed to see the poem. We do not need to see my attempt at creative writing. But then I remember going back to school in January, and I had spent the holidays changing my wardrobe, connecting with my community, and unlearning and learning a bunch of new things. And I just remember walking into school that first day back after the break, and I looked quite a bit different. I like to joke, I looked so much more gay than I had been before. I was a failed hockey jock in the past, and I showed up in like skin tight jeans and a nice little V-neck, and it was a whole vibe. And I just remember the feeling of walking through my hallways and being myself, and you could see people like shifting their perception of me because they'd known intuitively that I wasn't showing up as my full self before. And now myself and everyone else felt what it was like for me to actually be me in my classrooms.
That is, you know what? It's so funny that you say that, that everyone around you could see who you are, and it took you a while to catch up and to see yourself as, or to allow yourself to express yourself as you truly are. I think that happens to a lot of us, where the people, especially the people around us who care about us, want the best for us and can see all the potential and power that we have, but we don't recognize it yet.
Exactly that.
So I'm so glad you had a positive experience about like discovery and identity. Can you share with us maybe a story about one that wasn't positive and how you navigated that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, the brass tacks of it is this world isn't always nice to queer and trans people. And that is like the superstructure, right? Like, I remember when I first came out as trans and I walked out of my apartment building looking a little bit more feminine, visibly more gender nonconforming. And my legs were shaking. I had makeup on, I was wearing women's clothes, and I was absolutely terrified. And, you know, walking down the street, people looked at me weird. I attracted a whole lot more attention, and not like the good kind of attention, but folks with like their faces would fog up. They would clearly have some like, ooh, uncomfortable feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And then more explicit stuff like, you know, folks shouting slurs, being rude, my safety not being as much of a thing as it was before. And that was terrifying. And the tricky part of that is it doesn't go away, right? Like the world is taking steps in a more positive direction, thank goodness. But the world still has that environment of icky. And that's a burden that many trans folks and queer folks and other folks have to walk with every day. But for me, the thing that has helped me get through it is seeing the other side of that. You know, I am a 28-year-old, 5'11", broad-shouldered, deep-voiced trans lady with the most stunning ginger hair that anyone's ever experienced. But walking as my true self, despite all the icky and the complicated, I think has also allowed other folks to do the same, right? When one person is being authentic, it invites others to be authentic too. And it's this concept that was coined, I think it was by Laverne Cox in America, who talked about possibility models. And the idea that when like young people deserve to see examples of not who they are or who they will be, but of who they could be, or a version of that of someone else that they themselves could become. And that allows us to see that opportunity, to see that there is a way to be our authentic selves. And so the thing that gets me through some of the icky is knowing that as I'm walking through the streets of my city here in Ottawa, there might be a trans kid who sees me and thinks, oh, I can be myself too. And I can be happy being myself too.
Yeah.
And that is such a powerful message for a young person to receive.
Absolutely. Yeah. As they say, representation matters. And if you don't see yourself reflected anywhere, it's hard to even really imagine that you could be what you really want to be or who you really want to be.
Exactly that.
So do you have anyone that you looked up to? Like, was there anyone who inspired you to just be brave and stand out?
There were a few folks that really changed my world. And I think one of them would be Susan Gapka. Susan is I think she'd allow me to call her this. She's an older trans woman who lives in Toronto. And she has been, before we had this moment today where we have more literacy and conversations around gender, she was fighting the good fight in the 90s and early 2000s. She was one of the folks who helped fight for trans rights legislation and to make sure that we could get the access to the health services that we need. I met her when I was like 17 or 18, before I'd come out as trans, before I even realized I was trans. And I think knowing her and seeing her walk her truth, especially as somebody who lived in that truth at a time where, you know, animosity, discrimination, stigma towards trans people was so much worse than the icky that we still have today, mm-hmm. That she was a beacon to me even before I knew I needed that beacon.
Well, like you said, there are probably so many younger people who are looking up to you and seeing that they can be free in how they want to express themselves. And, you know, here at System Kids, we this is the hour of power for young people in and from care. I know that you are not from care yourself, but in your advocacy work and just in your social circle, you have connections with folks in and from care, right?
Absolutely. I have had the pleasure of doing I have some pals who are advocates in this space, who come from a lived experience in this space, who have also taught me a hell of a lot.
What did they teach you?
I think they taught me about resilience and about strength. A lot of folks in and from care have had adverse and traumatic life experiences, and that's a lot to manage. And, you know, I would never equate my own experiences to those. But I've had my own adverse experiences too, and to see folks who are walking with all of those experiences and keeping going and helping change and challenge these systems, it gives a fundamentally very privileged white lady from a middle-class family such as myself a lot of perspective that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And to see them continuing to fight the fight despite those adverse experiences and to keep changing the world. Oh God, that's inspiring. Like nobody's business.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that one.
Nothing but a my way.
in your work at the Queer Momentum Center, did I get that right?
At Queer Momentum, yeah.
Yes. What do you do? How do you use your voice there? Or how do you guys use collectively? How do you collectively use your voice?
So our stick is building a movement to respond to the rise of homophobia and transphobia, and to push governments to do more and do better to advance rainbow equality for queer Canadians. Mm-hmm. And in that space, it is really all about lifting up our voices and helping others do the same. Mm-hmm. You know, we are in a political and social environment today where politicians and icky groups are lying about our communities. They're trying to scare people. They're trying to scapegoat us so they can push an agenda that is fundamentally opposed to human rights, that is about controlling our bodies, limiting our freedoms, and restricting our charter protected rights. Mm-hmm. And our role and our work is to uplift the voices and tell the real stories. And so to me, that is all about speaking our truths. And sometimes those truths are messy, right? Like, we are human beings. We have complexity. But at the same time, like, those full stories, not just the, like, sugar-coated, not just the pretty picture-perfect stuff, but the stories of struggle, of overcoming struggle, and the stories of us simply trying to live our life, pay our bills, support our families, contribute to our communities. There is such power in those stories, because those are stories that everybody in Canada can relate to.
Absolutely. There is so much power in being able to share your story. So do you have any tips for young people who would like to share their story? At Voices, we talk a lot about sharing your story in a safe way, so as not to like vicariously traumatize your audience or re-traumatize yourself.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any guiding tips for sharing your story for change?
I think it is about being mindful, right? Like, once you say something in a public space, you can't always take it back. And there's a lot of power in that. But in this world, and I can imagine this is true in the in-care space and from-care space as well, folks often want to know all the messy details and want the story that is salacious and sensationalized and that, like, pulls on all the heartstrings. And so I think having your boundaries set is really important. Having space for you to say, this is who I am, but I'm not going to answer every question. That is really powerful. And then I think the second thing is, your story doesn't have to be perfect. I think a lot of folks feel like they have to present this very polished impression of themselves, or like they have to have like a 300-word script that's memorized. They've thought through every word. Mm-hmm. As a public speaker, I stumble over myself as often as I don't. And that's actually part of the story. That is part of showing the authenticity. We don't want polished, scripted, cookie-cutter stories. We want real, hard, interesting, complicated stories, because that is how humans live our life. So own your truth, speak that truth, and don't hesitate to like, when you make a mistake, when you stumble, just keep going, because it's the story that people want to hear. They're not going to notice if you trip over a word or two.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's very true. Those are very good tips. So if a young person wanted to get involved in your work, do you guys welcome youth volunteers, or how can they learn more about what you do and how to get involved?
We absolutely love youth volunteers. We are an organization that very much supports and relies in part on the passion and brilliance of young folks to help us do the work that we do. And so folks can go to www.momentumcanada.net. You can join our newsletter if you see the Join Us tab on that screen. You can also go to the Action Center. And on the Action Center, we have all the campaigns that we're pushing right now. Mm-hmm. And there are some important ones at the moment, right? We are seeing in three different provinces, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and New Brunswick, governments restricting the rights and freedoms of trans kids and interfering in healthcare and doing all these other messy things. And so if you want to lift up your voice, you can sign some of those campaigns, those petitions, send a letter to your MP. And if you want to tap in a bigger way, just join that newsletter, click the I Want to Volunteer button, and we'll help loop you in to our fight for a more free, equal, and socially just future for all of our families.
Right. And next week, or the week of May 11th, I believe, is a pretty big week. And I hear that you guys are doing something in Manitoba as well. Is there going to be a rally?
Oh, we're doing something everywhere. So next week, we are organizing the largest queer advocacy action since marriage equality in 2 decades. We're going to have rallies in 19 cities and towns across this country, and dozens of related advocacy events and community gatherings, including one indeed in Winnipeg. And I believe we've got some letter writing events in other parts of Manitoba as well. If you want to learn more about the Rainbow Week of Action, this chance for us to lift up our voices for more free and equal Canada, for rainbow equality, and to reject the hate and disinformation the bad guys are throwing at us, you can go to www.rainbowequality.ca. You click on the events tab, you can find the Winnipeg rally and you can RSVP. And we want you to show up, to bring your friends, your family, and speak up with us to get back to building a better Canada and to reject the dividing, distract approach of the icky folks trying to roll back our rights.
Absolutely. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing with us how you came to find your voice and how you're using your voice, and how other young people, especially young people in and from care, can use their voice and share their story to affect change and to just make better systems, a better society where everyone feels welcome and safe and respected.
Thank you so much. This has been an honor and a pleasure. And thank you for what you're doing, uplifting these voices and telling these stories. I think that more of this is needed. And in a world where we're in many crises, I think, unfortunately, governments sometimes don't give the time and care that they need to the experiences of young folks in and from care. And so thank you for what you're doing. For everyone listening, keep being you, know your strength, and speak truth to power, because that's how change happens.
Awesome. Thank you, Faye.
Thank you so much.
Well, that was a jam-packed hour full of the first voice experiences. And I hope, young person who's listening, I hope that you feel inspired to use your voice, whether it is collecting the stories of others in your home or in your community to have a combined effort, like Melanie did in creating the equitable standards, or whether it's standing up and being yourself 100% the way Faye did. Be loud, be proud, be exactly who you are. Share your story in a safe way, and you will be surprised how many people your story will resonate with. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in this week to System Kids here on CKUW 95.9 FM. We will see you next week for our season finale.